Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast-to-coast. I'm very excited, ladies and gentlemen. Arthur Gelb is with us. Arthur is one of the guys, he's an example of what I call a witness to a century. And he started his professional career as a very young man, as a copy boy with the New York Times back in the 40s, and I don't know if they still have copy boys. We'll have to ask him about that in a minute, but he calls himself a 100% New Yorker, and he's spent over five decades with the New York Times, and he's still there. He's still doing some things for them, but he's got a brand new book out called City Room, and I wanted him to join us and tell you a little bit about his experiences over the last several years. Mr. Gelb, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's good to have you on the show. It's exciting. I hope you don't mind me calling you a witness to a century.
Okay.
Well, you know, I have some other friends like that. You probably know Austin Kiplinger with the Kiplinger Editors, and he's also been on this show many times, and I consider him to be that. You guys, your career spans such an incredible time. I mean, your career began during World War II, and it spanned all the way through, you know, the manic 90s, and of course it's still going on. You're still very, very vital and productive.
And lucky.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree with you. And well, you know, I'm gonna say that I'm not gonna let you get off with a lucky thing. I'm gonna say you're blessed, because I think you made your own luck.
Well, thank you.
Tell us about look back over your career as a newspaper man, and tell us about how the newspaper industry has changed over the last 50 years.
Well, you know, the first thing you have to understand about newspapering is that it's not a perfect craft. There are mistakes and holes in stories every day, and they're just unavoidable because you're constantly working on the deadline pressure to get the paper out, and very often by the time press time comes, the stories are incomplete, and you haven't been able to check out every single fact. So with that as a basic understanding, my career really started with great excitement from the first day I was at the paper, and it changed a lot physically as well as atmospherically. The paper then, when I started, was a much more intimate craft. The desks, for example, were smack up against each other, so reporters sat very closely to each other, and they were able, that inspired conversation and debate. Today, with the age of the computers, reporters sit in their own individual cubicles, and there isn't that intimacy, and there isn't that camaraderie.
It's amazing how a 4 foot wall can separate people, isn't it?
Yes, there is a separation, and also that camaraderie led to conversation and debate after work, because there was the business in those days included after work incessant conversation in the saloons, the newspaper saloons near the newspaper office.
Did you stay
up until the wee hours of the morning talking about the newspaper.
Did the proximity also contribute to excellence?
Contribute to excellence?
Yes.
Yes, I think it did.
The camaraderie?
I think when mistakes were made, they were analyzed, debated, they were picked apart. And so the reporter really had to face his own comrades in that saloon if he didn't do his best, and that helped a great deal. There was a lot of self-criticism openly expressed.
Mm-hmm. I can see how that kind of proximity would do that, and but basically, one of the things you know, I don't think you use these words, but you described the city room where all the reporters would be back in those days, back when you first started, and for a long time afterwards. It's kind of like a beehive, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was very compact, and you had reporters working on typewriters, clacking away at their typewriters, copy boys taking the stories, especially on the deadline pressure, a paragraph at a time from the typewriters to the copy desk. The copy editors would be using paste and scissors to revise the stories. This place was in constant motion, nonstop motion.
Stand by, it was noisy
and cluttered and
Mr. Intimate. Gale, we got to take a quick break. You know, folks, they say that two things you never want to see made is laws and sausage, but maybe we might want to add a third one there, Mr. Gale. The third thing is you might not ever want to see newspapers made. Stand by. 20 till. We'll be right back with Arthur Gale, author of City Room, and I consider him to be a witness to a century. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Having a great visit with our new friend, Mr. Arthur Gale, author of City Room. He rose from being a copy boy in 1944 till his retirement from the position of managing editor of the New York Times. And I don't have to tell you about the New York Times and its importance in the world of journalism. And Mr. Gale, what I would like for you to do now is take us on a quick tour. First, let me ask you this question. Is there even such a thing as a copy boy anymore?
No, today there's a copy person.
Copy person. Okay, I want to make sure we got the PC thing out there. All right, now.
In the old days, there were copy boys and copy girls.
And copy girls.
I married a copy girl.
I was going to say, see, now how can we have any romance if we have a copy person, that's so sterile. Why can't we have copy boys and copy girls again?
I agree with you. I think we should go back to copy boys and copy girls.
See, this is where it all went wrong in America when we did away with copy boys and copy girls. We can trace it right back there now.
I fell madly in love with an 18-year-old copy girl who had a big impact on my life. And
yeah.
I don't know if I would have fallen in love with a copy person.
Let's talk about your career. Give us the fast forward edition of your career from the time that you were hired as a copy boy to when you got the very impressive job of managing editor of the largest newspaper in the world.
Well, I my career was so full of life and fire and color when I think back on it, it's just so startling. I mean, I was in the newsroom just a few days, and my first mentor was a man named William L. Lawrence. He was the science writer, the most illustrious science writer in the country. And one day, I used to go to his desk every night and absorb his wisdom. And one day, he just disappeared. And we didn't find out what happened to him until August 7th, 1945, just a few months later, when the atom bomb was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and we found out where Lawrence had been.
Wow.
Was his byline was on all these stories released by the War Department. What had happened was that the General Groves, who was head of the Manhattan Project, which developed the bomb, went to the managing editor, borrowed Lawrence without telling the managing editor what he needed him for.
Wow.
A secret war mission. And it turned out that Lawrence became the historian of the bomb.
Wow.
So that was my first, and since he was the man who mentored me, he gave me great detail about what happened to him, and that's all in the book. And that was my, that story, which was the greatest exclusive story in the history of journalism, couldn't believe that I was witnessing all of this through the newsroom of the Times.
Did you know pardon the phrase, but did you know at ground zero of that story that you were in a very important environment?
When he came back, and since we had already become, we had a special relationship, he was like a father to me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew very quickly what happened in amazing detail. And it was unbelievable because he flew the mission over Nagasaki.
Right.
The War Department wanted him to know every detail of that project
so that he
could communicate it to the public.
He was embedded, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And the New York Times, of course, had an enormous edge because here we had our own science writer embedded. So when he came back, he wrote story after story after story for months, years. And we, of course, that's one of the things that made the Times so important, such important reading at that particular time.
Right. Well, that was a high point in...
That was the most momentous story I can remember.
The high point of the Times life. But, you know, and you retired from the managing editor's position in 1999, right?
In 1990. But, you know, the stories, there was one story after another. And you know, toward the end of my career, maybe 10 years before the end, came the big police corruption stories. Frank Serpico came to us. He came to us because the mayor wouldn't listen to him. The commissioner of investigation wouldn't listen to him. He went to our reporter because our reporter was doing great coverage of police. And he said, I have a story to tell. I know my life will be in jeopardy. But no policeman before Serpico dared blow the whistle on corrupt cops.
Took a lot
because
of courage.
they all knew they would be killed.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he told the New York Times a story. We ran it day after day on top of page one. Of course, it ended up later as a book and a movie with Al Pacino. But that was one of the great highlights of my newspaper career, exposing the crooked cops in New York, which led to exposure of crooked cops all over the country.
How closely were you involved in that story?
I'm sorry?
Were you directly involved in the...
I was the editor of that. I was the city editor. Then the metropolitan editor, Destroyed, came under my jurisdiction. And Serpico, a couple of days, because we were worried about him, slept in my office.
Wow.
We tried to protect him because we were worried about his life.
Right. Folks, you can... If you want to know how big a deal a guest is on my show, you can count the wow factor. The number of times that I say wow during an interview, you know that the person I'm talking to is saying or has done something pretty important, and this is such a thrill for me. We've got more to come right after these messages with our new friend Arthur Gelb, the author of City Room, which is a book about his career with the New York Times, and it's a tour of journalism over the last 60 years or so, and I think it's really important. And also, by the way, I want to point out, folks, that he's now one of my new heroes because I know how old he is and he's still very vital and very productive, and I want to be just like Arthur Gelb when I'm a little bit older. Tim,
thank you.
Till, stand by, we'll be right back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Folks, it's days like this that make me extra happy that I get to do what I do because I get to meet really cool people like Arthur Gelb, who's one of my new heroes. Because, you know, Mr. Gelb, and by the way, folks, the book is called City Room. It's available wherever fine books are sold and at least a couple of places maybe where they're not so fine. So check that out. It's an outstanding book. Folks, this is a huge book. It's about 650 pages, and I just if you're like me, you love newspapers, and you're fascinated with how they go together and how they work. You're gonna love this book, and I certainly recommend it to you, as you know, and which is one of the reasons why he's here. I don't introduce you to anybody or any book that I don't think is worthy, and Mr. Gelb and his book are more than worthy. Let's talk to us a little bit about some of the other exciting things that you did during your career. You spent some time with Woody Allen, didn't you?
Well, one of the most enjoyable parts of my career was when I was young, was starting the cabaret beat. The Times looked down on nightclubs and cabarets for a long time, and I thought there were... it was something we should be looking at because it was the beginning of the stand-up, intelligent stand-up comic, which trying to shock us into an awareness of the hypocrisy surrounding us in the world and
like
local
Bruce.
Politics in Washington.
Like Lenny Bruce.
So I started covering the comics. And one day, I went on my own to this little nightclub. It was a coffee house, actually. And this very funny man was on stage. No one had ever written about him before. I gave him a rave review, and of course it was Woody Allen.
I'll be darned.
That was his first review. Huh. And I was the first one at the Times to review Lenny Bruce, who was a very scatological stand-up comic. The Times wouldn't go near him.
Right.
And I said, I think I could handle it because he was such a revolutionary voice.
Yeah.
And I did. I wrote the first piece about him. In fact, it was very funny because as a result of writing that piece, next time I walked into that cabaret where he was on stage, he saw me come in and he said, put the spotlight on that man. That man has brought sex to the New York Times.
That's great. Well, you know, I'm not a big Woody Allen fan, but there is one quote that's attributed to him that I use a lot. And he said that 80% of life is just showing up, and I believe that.
Yeah, that's a great line.
Yeah.
You know, I went to review a comic, the comic was sick, and a singer came on instead. She was wearing a beaded dress, kind of a little strange looking, and then her voice, that velvety voice, and it turned out to be Barbara Streisand.
Wow.
And that was the first review she got. So I'm very happy about that period, discovering new talents and giving them a show.
You're like a friend of mine said... You just go places and things happen.
Well, you know, Maureen Dowd, who's a writer for the Times, says I'm like Zelig and Woody Allen Zelig. That I'm there all over. I'm all over the place.
Well, I think it's the Forrest Gump syndrome. You know, every time.
Yeah.
You know, you keep popping up behind everybody. That's great.
Very lucky.
All right, we got about a minute and a half. I'm going to let you give us your last thoughts, please.
Well, I tell you, it goes back to the newspaper, that I really feel that a great newspaper's mission is to have readers understand how a newspaper promotes the values of completeness, balance, accuracy, good taste, and all of that, promoting those values helps keep us all free, and I think that's the real essence of what I try to do. And what all good newspaper people should do.
Let's talk about, we've only got a minute, the future of newspapers. Young people are not reading newspapers. What do we got to do about that?
Well, we have to make the newspapers, so interesting and do such great investigative stories and cover the news so with such balance, without editorializing in the news columns, but giving...
Right.
Giving those young people a sense of what's truly going on, where they have to read you because you've done such a wonderful job, and I think that's what we have to keep striving for.
We also need to get away from the soundbite method of reporting too. I think
completeness is very important,
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we mix in entertainment. And we're too celebrity conscious.
Exactly.
And reporting in the news. And I'm sad to say that I think television, the television did that
and,
to us.
And the Internet's going to do the same thing. Mr. Gelb, I'm sorry to say we've got to wrap it up, but you promised to come back and do this again with us, and I'm very excited about that. Thank you for that, and congratulations on your book, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Arthur Gelb, ladies and gentlemen, the book is called City Room. Don't miss it. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.